Hello and welcome to Your Booked. I'm Daisy Buchanan, author, journalist, shelf-obsessed book inspector, and semi-professional nosy parker. Your Booked is the podcast where I visit writers I love in their own homes and ask them about what I find on their bookcases and who they are as readers and writers. I'm finding out about what makes a passionate, obsessive reader, how books inspire us, why we return to certain titles, and the way books can be challenging, comforting, inspiring, and everything in between. For example, here's Dolly Alderton talking about how her romantic choices have been influenced by the illustrations in The Joy of Sex. Dolly, can you tell me about the first book you read that you knew you really weren't supposed to be reading?
The Joy of Sex.
Oh, wow!
Yeah. And I think that The Joy of Sex is the reason why I like men with such big beards who look like they're straight out of a 70s porn film. That's like my type is 70s porn star. And I think it must have been because the first understanding of my own sexuality and male sexuality was reading that book. And I was incredibly young, so that must have left an imprint on my brain.
So where did you get it? Did your parents have it?
My mum had it, yeah. My mum's vibe is very The Joy of Sex. God love her.
Did she have it? Was it under her bed? Did you have to wait till she was out and sneak it?
No, I remember... I've never actually talked to her about this. I remember seeing it on... at the top of her bookshelf. And I remember waiting until I would get really excited if she ever left their house, because I would climb up and go find it and then pour through it. And it was illustrations. And then I found there were actual photos as well, of sort of close-up anatomy.
So was there penetration in the
Joy of Sex? Yeah, there was. And it was... I was completely fascinated by it. I think I had that thing that... I would have been really young when I read it. And I think I had that thing that I definitely knew I shouldn't have been reading it. I felt very shameful and embarrassed that I was reading it.
So do you know how old you were, roughly? Were you
probably
at school?
About 8 or 9, yeah. And then I remember feeling... I think most people I know had this feeling when they first started reading about the kind of machinations of the physical side of sex, that I felt... really excited and intrigued and exhilarated and incredibly scared as well. It felt very grown up and kind of grotesque, but I just could, and I carried on sort of going and dipping into it and reading the whole thing up until I was probably about 14.
I spoke to Elizabeth Day about connection, the reading that informs her writing, and game shows. You know, I think it's so important for people to see themselves in books, but also it's so important for every reader to see everyone in a book. It's important to know there are people who are like you and people who aren't like you.
Definitely. And that's something that I seek to do as a writer as well. I mean, my maxim is E.M. Forster's only connect. Like, if I can connect with a reader on any level, and if there's some flash of fellow feeling that makes them think of something that they've experienced in a slightly different way, or to revel in an experience in the newness of the retelling of it, then I've done my job. I was going to get a tattoo of Only Connect somewhere on my body until someone pointed out that it's also the name of a very naff quiz programme on BBC Two presented by Victoria Corrin. And I was like, OK, I'll wait for that to go off air.
I mean, if you got the tattoo, you'd definitely get on the celebrity special.
Well, there's swings and roundabouts, exactly. Do you know what I'm desperate for? I'm desperate to get on University Challenge, the alumni edition.
What would your specialist subject be?
Well, you don't need to have one in University Challenge. That's
sorry.
Mastermind. I'm sounding like a quiz expert.
And with that, there is no way I'm getting anywhere near either show.
I'll tell you what, my specialist subject for Mastermind would probably be The Archers.
Oh.
I've been listening to it since I was 4 and I've read all the... read all the books.
So there are Archer's books. Are these in storage?
They will be in storage from my parents, from the house I grew up in. Yeah. So that I was a very strange child who had two obsessions, cats and the Archers. And when you're a child with
cats
obsessions...
Cats the animal or the musical?
Cats the animal, yeah. But when you're a child and you have those obsessions, it means that they last forever and people always give you like Christmas presents.
Yes.
Thematic Christmas presents. So I got a lot of Archer's memorabilia, including these books that were... They told the story of the episodes of the Archers that I had missed from not having been born. So from 1940 onwards, they were just kind of novel versions of the soap.
Do you ever find it hard to draw the line between being really inspired by a writer and what they do and writing and thinking, I'm actually imitating them?
That's such a good question. Yes. I'm not one of those writers. I know some authors don't read fiction when they are writing fiction, and I'm not that like that at all. I really need constant fuel and inspiration. And I have noticed a couple of times certain turns of phrase have been influenced by whatever writer I'm reading at that particular moment. But I don't think it's a bad thing, because I don't think other people notice it. And it's sort of like a little private joke that I have with myself.
And a bit like an Easter egg, I guess, where if you've got a reader who sees it, they're sort of, it's an extra intimacy, an extra connection.
Exactly. And there's also the wonderful serendipity that happens when you've written a book and then someone else tells you that they've seen something in it that you didn't anticipate being part of it, that it reminds them of a book that you might never have read. So my second novel, Home Fires, my friend Olivia, again, the one who gave me the camp Elizabeth Jane Howard's, she read it and said it reminded her of Mrs. Dalloway by Virginia Woolf, which I had never read at the time, which is an incredible comparison. And I'm very grateful for it. But I hadn't read Mrs. Dalloway, and then I read it and it actually really took me aback how many similar plot pivots there were. Even the setting, it was sort of amazing. I mean, if I could write, you know, a tenth as good as Virginia Woolf, I'd be very happy.
Nina Stibbe admitted that she hasn't quite read everything she claims to have read, and this can have embarrassing consequences when it comes to gift giving.
But have you ever given anyone a book as a gift, having not read the book, and then realised that the book was entirely the wrong book?
Oh, for sure. Though I've definitely, just on holiday, it's more to friends, lending books to people, or parents mostly, and then, well, there's quite a lot of sex in that book, isn't there? And suddenly having that moment of, if I could just take that back or take out those pages. What are your inappropriate?
My worst one. I've done it a lot. I often buy people books that I hear are brilliant, and I buy it for myself. And then, so for instance, I met a friend the other day, and I got Less, and I hadn't read it yet, and I was so excited to share it, even though I hadn't read it. I said, oh, look, I have this. This is meant to be brilliant. I'll buy it again. And I did. But I did a really bad one with my dad, I didn't know him at all well. I, you know, didn't live with him after the age of about 3. And it was, you know, 1970s style divorce. So we didn't really see him very much. And he got married again, had another family. But he's very clever. He was a very clever man, very booky, very intellectual, and very into Freud and all that malarkey. Yeah. And so this book came out called The White Hotel. So it was my dad's birthday, and I hadn't got him anything. And I bought this book, so I gave it to my dad for his birthday. And then a month or so later, he said, oh, yeah, no, thank you for that book. Read it, loved it. He said, have you read it? And I said, yeah. And he said, did you like it? I said, yeah, it was great, loved it. And I hadn't read it. And then years later, I was on holiday, and it was the only decent book, or the only decent looking book on a bookshelf in a hotel or something. And I started reading it, and I was just dying, because it is so sexual in such a Freudy way. I almost could never see my dad again. It was like a woman wearing a whalebone corset, taking the bone out and shoving it up. You know, it was just like, oh my God, no. It was very, very, very sexual. I can't remember it. In fact, I didn't read all of it. I just couldn't. But I did get to a bit where there was a woman suffering from delusions that had to describe her fantasies to her psychoanalyst. And oh my God, it was just the worst thing. And my dad died last March, and I always regret that I didn't go, Dad, I didn't, I haven't read it yet. But he's gone to his grave thinking that I'm some kind of utter weirdo.
Writer, actor, and I don't say this lightly, comic genius, Dawn French. We talked about literary families, perfect poems, and the comedy writer's secret weapon, Ladybird books.
I'll tell you something that was hilarious, and I realised was so helpful, is that when Jennifer and I sat down to write sketches, you know, sometimes we'd set them in, I don't know, Elizabethan times, or we'd be cave women or whatever, you know, they'd be all over history, if you like. We realised that we really didn't know any history. Or if we did, we had it all completely confused. We had all the wrong kings and queens. And we just failed. We just failed history, basically. So we would end up calling things the olden days. and that was anything from yesterday backwards. So when we wanted to write specific characters that were set in a specific time, do you know what we used as our reference? Ladybird books.
Oh!
The Ladybird Guide to the Tudors, or the Ladybird Guide to, I don't know, prehistoric Britain or whatever. That was it. You know, you've got 20 pages with illustrations that tell you the kind of buildings and what people were doing and who the king was and so on. That was it. Those were our references. They were brilliant. This was all before the internet, obviously.
Author, director and global traveller Richard Ayoade. We went to one of the most bookish basements in the world, the Faber office, where we're assured that Richard lives. And we talked about rom-com tropes, the work of Dostoevsky, Scorsese, Woodhouse and Adam Sandler.
And recently, about a year or two ago, maybe 2 years, I really started reading P.G. Woodhouse, which I'd just not... I don't know, for whatever reason, I just hadn't read or wanted to, which is just pure joy and just so... such an amazing world to be in and to...
Do you favour Jeeves and Wooster or the Blandings books or...?
It's a good... I have a weakness for Uckridge. I do like him. He's such a brilliantly... He's always out of money and always trying to touch people for a fiver. And there's something slightly... I think he is always trying to live with his aunt in Wimbledon and... It's always been kicked out. There's something very appealing about him. But it's hard to beat Jeeves and Wooster for just how brilliantly written they are. I mean, the Blandings books are great too. For someone who's as focused on joy as he is and as delightful as he is, there is a sort of shadow sadness in it, I feel, in that... There's no parents. He has no parents. Mm. Where are they? They're never mentioned. He is slightly on his own. I mean, I love how terrified he is of being married. There's something just very funny about that.
And Poona Bell shared an intimate dedication from her late husband and talked about how a love of books was an integral part of her romantic relationship.
The one book that he gave me, which I did start, and here we go, was this. And I tried...
Oh, wow. Master and Margarita, yeah. By Mikhail Bulgakov.
He absolutely loved this. I found it just quite difficult to get into, but I think for this, the inscription. Like, so Rob wrote this whole inscription in there and said that it was one of his favourite books. And this for me,
oh my God.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, love.
I know. And so, oh my God, you've actually succeeded in making me vote. No, no, no. Don't worry, I don't tend to, but this inscription,
To read this?
Yes,
do you
absolutely.
Do you want me to read it or would you like to read it?
I can read it. So, dearest, wonderful, lovely, beautiful, clever, funny, loving, perfect wife. The Master and Margarita is one of my favourite books, so I would like to make you a gift of this copy. I hope you enjoy reading it as much as I did the first time. Love from your loving husband, Rob. I did not enjoy this book. When I told him.
I feel like we should have a hug. Is that weird? Bring it in.
I know. Oh, God. Daisy, I never get emotional. But, yeah, I mean...
He just got going around making people cry.
I was just like, because he kept asking me, I was like, have you started it? And I was like, no, I'm going to get to it. Knowing full well that I'd started it. And I was like, this is horrendous. I just can't continue. And then eventually I just had to fess up and I said, I'm really sorry, but this book is just nuts and I just can't get on board with it. And I think, but I will always keep that, even though I know I will never read that book as long as I live. That inscription was just, I think I came across it when I had moved into this flat because I was just thinking, ugh, it's that book again. And I couldn't remember that was the inscription inside of it. But yeah, that is very precious.
Every week we hear from listeners who've fallen in love with our guests and their libraries and who end up discovering brand new books and future favourites as a result. We can't wait to discover and share more with you. I'm Daisy Buchanan. Thank you so much for listening to the Your Booked story so far.